You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 14th of December. A fun little day with 2 days off in a row. I'm not the only one mentioning it. I'll have that for you. We'll go on a deep dive on a player and see if it's someone we might like. And it's a points gain Friday. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky little numbers. I hope you're having a great day, enjoying yourself. It was pretty funny yesterday. I would share with you, I had a great conversation with Kevin Pelton, and we got into a whole debate about something, and I was like highly emotional and, talking about how I hate plays like this and da-da-da and all these kind of things and that player this and that. And so then I promptly, we went and did the research, and it like came out to nothing. It was like such the ultimate example of the value of analytics. Like, you have this emotional outbreak. You're so fired up about it. You're so right, like, because it's just like there's such passion. And this is where analytics, I think, is so valuable, is that then we go look at it, and the numbers showed, like, the impact of what I was talking about was, like, it happening every game for 20 games for it to maybe impact the outcome of a game. Like, maybe. It's where I think some of this is so, it's truly where I believe in analytics. Like, I think that your emotion and your moment in time is so important. It's a little bit of what I feel about where the reason I bring this up is I feel this way for the Jazz right now. That I think analytical analysis on the Jazz right now is really valuable. Because when you've played the schedule and you've gone through what you've gone through, you could start, I talked about this earlier this week, you could go suddenly start changing everything you do and what you believe in and who you are and really freak out about stuff. And you know, I think the end result of that is that you suddenly would have moved your, you know, I've talked about this a lot, adjustment off adjustment off adjustment. You don't want to do that. And then all of a sudden you do that and you're nowhere near the same team you once were. And the only reason was is because you didn't have Oklahoma City's schedule to start. Like, if we had Oklahoma City's schedule to start, we'd feel good about ourselves. Great we are. Do you think we could beat the Warriors? The Warriors are struggling. They lost to the Raptors. They're not quite as good. I think we can win the West. My buddy Rob would be worrying about the deal he gave everybody at Shamrock Auto. I love Rob. So I said the other day in a really short form, Rob thought the Jazz were going to win it. And, I mean, that is not exactly what Rob said to me. So I, of course, get an email from Rob Taylor over at Shamrock Auto Group the other day, in which he's like, let me explain exactly what I meant. I know, Rob, but I'm a talk show host, so it's not I'm not about to do that. I'm not about to give you exactly that. That would be completely unfair. He had, like, this whole breakdown. This is exactly what I meant. I know exactly what you meant. It was pretty – I laughed. I love him. He's such a good dude. It's always so fun to talk to him. He's mad at me still because I have not read Captain's Club. So I need to read that. By the way, they are still doing – that's still going on, the family with the three kids with and they're getting the lift for them for their car. So if you're interested in that, it's gofundme.com, help-the-honeys-for-the-holidays. Help the honeys for the holidays at GoFundMe. Hopefully you've heard that story. If you hadn't, I've put the link there. It's quite something. And they're getting a small bus with a handicap and wheelchair lift for the family. I think there was three kids with muscular dystrophy. I mean, woo, woo. So that's a challenge, and the community's helping them out. That's what makes this environment so great. All right, I want to get through a few things. It's not just me. The Ringer today. As of Thursday, every other Western Conference team is projected to face opponents with a combined winning record over 500 the rest of the season. Among the 16th's hardest schedules. Every Western Conference team except one. the Utah Jazz. The Jazz face a cumulative opponent winning percentage of 48.1 the rest of the way. I don't love that as a way of analyzing a schedule, but I understand what the author's doing. I just don't like it because if you play one team that's really bad or one team that's really good, it skews it. I think it's more important how many above and below 500 games in those type of teams you're playing, as the league stratifies usually into three groups. Utah could use the break after facing the NBA's hardest schedule through 2 months. The Jazz have struggled this season to gain traction on both individual and team talent. Right. That's why, people. I love this, though. That's the Rudy Gobert's allowing points at the rim. He is not. That is just not true. I know. Can you have the national guys on to talk about us? Like, why do people want that? We have Locked On podcasts for every single team so that you don't need the national people. Yet the Jazz have only played 6 games against teams with losing records. Only the Suns, who can't play themselves, count. Fewer Jazz have played 10 games against non-conference opponents so far, though there have been some easy games, Brooklyn, Charlotte, Miami twice. That's it, people. There's been plenty of misery. Boston twice, Indiana twice, Toronto and Philadelphia. And they've also played the higher percentage of their games on the road than any other team, amplifying the challenge in an already challenging slate. See, it's not just me. And then he points out that in Utah's 4 seasons under Quinn Snyder, the Jazz are 19th in first half wins and 6th in second half wins. By far the biggest differential. The schedule itself does it for the Jazz. Flip side, he talks about the Thunder. The Thunder torrid start has gained notice, rightfully. They're 9-2 against the East, but outside of one home game against the Celtics, a loss, its opponents have been Charlotte twice, Cleveland twice, Washington, New York, Atlanta, Detroit, Brooklyn, Chicago, also a loss. We haven't played any of those teams. Okay, we played Charlotte. We beat them. Charlotte twice, Cleveland twice, Washington, New York, Atlanta, Detroit, Brooklyn, and Chicago. My goodness. They're 11-1 against teams with losing records, 6-8 against teams with above 500 of the Thunder. One positive, they've blown out those teams. Hey, that, you know what? According to Tankathon, the Thunder have the hardest remaining schedule of any team. Let's see. And I remind you that no team with Russell Westbrook is their lead player has ever won more than 48 games. So let's see. But I'm not the only one who came up with it. Remaining strength of schedule, according to Tankathon, Utah's 26th. Washington, Orlando, Toronto, and Milwaukee have the easiest. It's pretty interesting. Milwaukee and Toronto have the easiest. Dallas, here are the toughest schedules remaining in the NBA. Dallas, Oklahoma City, Houston, Golden State, San Antonio, Portland, the Knicks, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Timberwolves, the Pelicans. 10 of the 11, people. Now, we got to stay healthy, knock on wood, and we've got to be able to handle the fact that you're supposed to go win. You know, you just can't blink. Like, we got to go beat Orlando and Mexico City in a weird environment. You can't, and they've already been there for 3 days. What you've done is you've put yourself in a position where you can't blink. I just saw that Zach Lowe released his 10 things, and it includes a Donovan Mitchell note. We are going to react to this together live on the air. And then I have a prepared segment. I hit Zach LaVine in this space for middling assist to turnover ratio, so it seems a fair point out Donovan Mitchell's 81 assists to 65 turnovers. He's averaging just 3.2 dimes per game, fewer than last season, and disappointment, even if Mitchell plays a ton of next-to-pass first point guard Rubio, equal opportunity offense, writes Zach Lowe. Mitchell sometimes careens in the lane with his mind made up he's going to shoot, only to pick up his dribble, realize he hasn't beaten his guy, and heave some desperation pass in the hands of a waiting defender. Okay? On some drives, he'll take one dribble. He has video of this. To move many into the trees instead of kicking out. Okay? I think his reads are not as good this year. This is fair by Zach so far. On others, he passes too early when he should punctuate the defense with the one extra dribble. He's a touch overconfident in his handle, his ability to contort between thickets and reaching arms. He gets stripped a lot. He loves high-risk cross-court passes, but underestimates the speed of NBA defenders. This is fair, feeling harsh. he'll keep going. Utah's scoring just 1.91 points per possession anytime Mitchell shoots out of a pick and roll or passes to a teammate who let it fly. That's 93rd out of 165 players who have used at least 75 ball screens. I'm not sure I think that one's fair because our offense isn't good and our shooting is bad. So is that his fault? I mean, I think a lot of this stems from the fact we don't have a lot of shooting. The other thing I would say is that, you know, this is what we have talked about a lot on this podcast. This is being a second-year player in the NBA. That's actually what Zach says next. All this is typical of young players. Think of how high their standards are. We nitpick LaVine, Mitchell, Chris LeVert, or Caris LeVert, Jalen Brown, Jamal Murphy, Devin Booker, and many others either taking too long to get rid of the ball or get rid of it. Making these reads in real time, the NBA is high art. It requires a second-by-second mapping of nine other humans in motion and the brain power to think one step ahead. It's hard to win 50-plus games when asking a second-year player to do that as the undisputed alpha on offense. Unless the guy's name is LeBron or Chris Paul. Huh, I wonder if Zach read my tweets. Mitchell will be fine. He hasn't regressed. He has better vision and feel than most of the other guys, but his sophomore stagnation is a reminder the NBA is tough. I think that's really fair. Zach's always good. Zach's really, really good. You know, I think some of that one number, I think, is a little bit, we're in the middle of the pack, and the offense isn't in the middle of the pack, so I think that's a little misleading. But this is pretty good. You know, if you've listened to this show, you don't win. It's not, and by the way, I'm going to point out, I might have to point out to Zach in this. It's hard to win 50-plus games while asking a second-year player to do that as an undisputed alpha on offense unless the guy is a young LeBron James or Chris Paul. I will go retweet this, by the way. LeBron James won 42 games his second year, and I'm not sure what Chris Paul did, but it was not win. It was not be the undisputed guy on offense and win, at least scoring-wise, and win 50 games because that has never been done by any team or any player ever in the last 30 years by a guard. Okay, there were a bunch of caveats I put in there, but you got what I'm saying. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. All right, I always have these experiences and then begin to wonder, like, has everybody already known this? And I'm just the loser that's like the last one of the party. But I had another one of these experiences last night. So in an absurd parenting night, I picked my daughter up at finishing from skiing right down by the park and ride below the Cottonwood Canyons, and she had a basketball game in Ogden. So, yes, at 5 o'clock, we were driving from Sandy to Ogden, and that sucks, by the way, if you didn't know this already. And I put my Murdoch Hyundai Santa Fe on cruise control with its assist to the car in front of you. So it has, I think, many people, these new cars, and it comes standard in the Santa Fe. This is a great example of the great things that you get with your Santa Fe. And it comes with the, so you put your cruise control, you see how many lengths you want to be away from the car in front of you. And so I put that on. And this was so cool because I had not done this before or really, frankly, trusted it well enough. I just left it on the entire time, and as we kept going, and then we ended up getting off on that like road up to the right-hand side by Weber State, and we're through the lights and bumper to bumper, it would literally bring me to a stop. The adaptive cruise control is what it's called, and then I just click a little button. It would start me back up, and it would keep me the distance, and I never had to worry about it. Plus, lane assist, it made driving in the most horrendous hour and 35-minute bumper-to-bumper traffic actually manageable. I loved it. Anyway, personal note, personal story, just thought I'd share. Go ahead and stop by Murdoch Hyundai in Logan, in Linden, at 4646 South State Street in Murray, and check out all the things you can get if you buy a Hyundai. And compare shop to the other cars. Make sure you at least include Hyundai on that list. Tell them Locke sent you. Look at it. See what they get. And you'll find out that you get that adaptive cruise control, lane keep assist, blind spot detection, 360 cameras are now all standard in all of them, and the safe exit assist on the Santa Fe as well, where if your kid in the back seat tries to open the door to oncoming traffic, the vacuum shuts the door so that it can't happen and your kid's safe. Pretty darn cool. All right, that was a lot of that. Let's do our first little fun thing of the year. Tomorrow is the 15th. Trades start to happen. All sorts of fun things around the league. And so players kind of semi become available. And yesterday there was a move where I think, the way I read it, is a player became available. And so let's take a look and see whether or not, let's have some fun. Let's pretend that we're looking to see if this is a player that in the Utah Jazz quest to kind of build out their roster, we'd be interested in. The Brooklyn Nets yesterday signed Spencer Dinwiddie to an extension. The way I read this, if they just signed Spencer Dinwiddie to an extension and they love Caris LeVert and D'Angelo Russell is a restricted free agent, that I think he's probably available. 6'5", 200-pounder, plays the point guard for them, 22 years old, out of Louisville, Kentucky, was the second pick by the Lakers, and after 2 years in L.A., they moved him. He's been 2 years in Brooklyn. He's averaging 18 points a game. He's averaging 4 rebounds. He's averaging 6 assists. It looks awesome. If you offer him $18 million in the offseason, which is a whole hell of a lot, you better believe in him. I would be very surprised if Brooklyn matched. So let's take a look at him. Let's take a look and see whether this would be a player that anyone should be interested in. And I have my various little spots that I go to do my search. So I thought it'd be fun to kind of take you on that journey for a player that, you know, frankly, I don't think there's any deal we could make right now, and I'm not. But, you know, in the offseason, if Ricky is a free agent and decides to go somewhere else, and now suddenly you're probably talking about whether it's D'Angelo Russell, someone we want to make and commit to, and does he complement Donovan. The overall scouting report on D'Angelo Russell is incredibly long, very skilled, limited athletically in what he can do, and we'll get into that in a second. He had incredible vision at Ohio State that I don't see as often in the NBA. And then there's a little bit of senseless possessions. So if you take a look at him from a points gain standpoint, there's your first significant red flag. So you look at D'Angelo Russell and you're like, I want D'Angelo Russell. I bet you most people just said, I want D'Angelo Russell. We can't score. He averages 18 points a game. He's shooting 36% from three. And plays 30 minutes. And he's a former number two pick. And I'm all in. Well, here's our first data point. And that is he's a minus 1.8 points gained. Ooh. All right, well, maybe it's a bad year in Brooklyn. Let's take another look. Last year, he was a minus 1.4 points gained. His last year in L.A. with the Lakers, he was a minus 1 points gained. What's going on? He's actually getting less efficient every single year of his career? That seems a little wacky. But that's why. Well, in the 16-17 season, he went to the free throw line 7% of his possessions. In the 16-17-18 season, he went to the line 6.6% of his possessions. And now, all of a sudden, he's going to the line 4.4% of his possessions. Holy smokes. That's like none. Who goes to the line 4.? J.R. Smith, who is a pure spot-up shooter, doesn't play the ball in his hands, never drives the basket, goes to the line at a higher rate. Rodney Hood goes to the line at 2 times that rate this year. Rodney Hood is actually going to the line a little bit this year. So I almost want to stop the process right there. But I got to be honest, I watch him. You know, a lot of what you're looking for if you're a general manager in the league is who's the next Victor Oladipo? Who's the high draft picks, been in funky situations, hasn't worked out, you get him in your situation, and it works. I am not the biggest believer that changing situations always works. I don't think teammates impact players. But let's take a look at some of D'Angelo Russell's shot chart and see if there's anything that's special to D'Angelo Russell's shot chart. And what you find out is that, well, this is actually a highly efficient mid-range player. Is that good or is that bad? You can decide. He is 50% straight away, 55% angle left on his mid-range twos, and his corner threes are unbelievable. 16 of 27 I've done a little bit of the research on that. He is a top five catch and short shoot corner three shooter. Well, that's interesting to me because he doesn't get to do that. He plays with the ball in his hands as the primary ball handler. But if he's such a good catch and shoot guy, well, then maybe there's some other way to use him. He is a terrible rim finisher. His overall mid-range shooting is 46%, one of the best mid-range guys in the league. His corner three shooting, we're talking about his rim finishing this year, he's at 53% at the rim. Let's go back to last year. Is this a consistent trend for D'Angelo Russell? This is a lot of time on D'Angelo Russell, but I find these projects to be fun. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a pretty big fan, and so hopefully this is okay. Some other people are like, oh, somebody's wife or somebody's husband is listening right now, and they're like, this, why do we care about D'Angelo Russell? But I think this is, I mean, this is honestly, I'm such a geek. This is what I do in my free time. So last year, you look at D'Angelo Russell, and a lot of the same things come up. Middle of the floor, long twos, he's great. Corner three shooting, he's 10 of 27. He's not as good, but he's pretty good. And there's the rim finishing weakness again. He's at 58%. Mid-range shooting, he's at 44. Above the break three, he's only at 32. So I begin to wonder when I analyze him, so he's inefficient, he's not going to the line, he's not a good rim finisher. Well, the book on him is he's not a great athlete. So is the flaw here actually that he's playing with the ball in his hands too much? Is it suddenly, is he a better player if you can put him on the floor with, I guess in our case, it would likely be, if you're playing him 19 million, it's, if you're analyzing from a Jazz standpoint, and I'm, again, I don't know if that's highly likely, and I'll be perfectly honest with you. I chose him because I thought it was pretty safe that nobody could try to claim I was, you know, making a move for us. But if you suddenly look at him, is he a player who actually might be better at 6'5", playing kind of a combo guard with someone like Donovan Mitchell? What are his stats any different when he played with Caris LeVert this year? Or if he played with Spencer Dinwiddie this year? Dinwiddie somewhat, both those players are somewhat similar to Donovan in that they both can handle, but that they're not a point guard because D'Angelo Russell has the ball in his hands all the time. So if we take a look at that, when Caris LeVert was on the floor, D'Angelo Russell's shooting percentage was 3.5 percentage points higher, and his three-point shooting went from 33% to 41%. Now, wait a sec. What's going on here? Here's a guy who suddenly gets off the ball a little bit, maybe, and looks pretty good. And has been a little less good since Caris LeVert got hurt. Spencer Dinwiddie would be another one. They don't play a great deal together, but let's take a run through those numbers. This is like I just go play these numbers. Here it is again, though. They play about 10 minutes a night together. His shooting percentage is 1 percentage points better at the field goal, and his three-point shooting suddenly takes him from 35 to 38. Wait a second. Is he a good catch-and-shoot three-point shooter? Is that what we're finding out here? Is that suddenly we look at D'Angelo Russell, and this year on catch-and-shoot, he's 39%. He's taking pull-up threes, he's at 32%, which actually isn't bad. That shot is just not one that's going in this league year for most people. But he takes one more, a little bit more pull-up threes than catch and shoot because he's playing with his ball, the ball in his hand so much. Maybe he's a weak side, second side offensive player. Last year, 36% catch and shoot, which is right at the league average. Pull-up three is 29.5 or 29.2, not good. And if you go back to his Laker year, that seems to ring true again. 37% on catch and shoot, 34% on pull-ups, but he takes as many. So if you suddenly took him, and instead of 3.3 catch and shoots and 3.3 pull-ups, you suddenly made it 5 or 6 catch and shoots and 1 or 2 pull-ups, does he become a more efficient, viable player? And is he actually a pretty good secondary ball handler with your main unit? And then in your second unit, he could go back to being point guard. Now he's really good. And you find some sort of three guard rotation there. I don't know. I think it's interesting. I'll tell you what. I'm a big believer in my points gained stat. I like points gained a huge amount. He's a terrible points gained player. Makes me very nervous and just about makes me want to say no right away. But the more I dig into someone like that, a former number two pick with that kind of background, has bounced around and played for a bad Laker team and played for a bad Brooklyn team and hasn't really had a chance to play for a good team yet. I don't know that I totally believe in that. By the way, I just said it. I think he's interesting. I will be intrigued to follow him for the rest of the little run. The interesting notes on him, just to kind of back up what we've already found out, he's an average shooter off the pick-and-roll ball handler because he takes a lot of mid-range shots and doesn't get fouled at all. He's a good spot-up shooter. He's in the 78th percentile. He's a bad isolation player because he's not a good athlete. He's not good in transition. He's pretty good on handoffs. He's pretty good off screens. He backs up. The question is, has he been misused as the primary ball handler as a non-elite athlete for his career? I don't know. I thought that was kind of fun. Hey, it's the holiday season, and the store is available for you at 6200 South and 20th East. I tried to run by there yesterday so I'd have nibble food on my drive all the way from, I already mentioned it, I know, Snowbird to Ogden. Really? I really did that. Snowbird to Ogden, Ogden to Park City, so I could watch 35 minutes of 8th grade girls basketball. That was a good use of time. Just kidding. The store's got a bunch of great things. It's Friday. That means June pies are in today. 6200 South, 20th East. The Mudslide Cookies are there as well. My absolute favorite. They've got a great meat selection that I keep mispronouncing, and everyone keeps reminding me, and now I'm too nervous to say it correctly, but they've done this big taste test, and they changed the kind of meat they're getting, and it's way better than what they had before. It was a 17-0 vote amongst the three people on their different, it must have been 15-0 on the five different meats they tested. And so they switch the meat they're covering, and it's a local-based, and it's really, really good, and it starts with an 8, and it has a 4 on the end of it. It's like Harford or Forford, or I don't know how to pronounce it. I've screwed it up too many times. And all you're emailing me and telling me, and you're very nice and you're polite, but you think I'm an idiot, so I'm trying to avoid being an idiot. You can check it out, look at it, pronounce it, and go, Locke's an idiot, at 6200 South and 20th East. It's the store. You get all the local touches as well. And if you sneak a little look behind their produce area, you'll see them making the pico de gallo and all the salsas that they have out for you as well. It's a wonderful, great environment. And give the high school kid who's taking the cart out for the elderly and taking her bags out in that community feel a high five on his way back in and make him feel good. Today's show is also brought to you by Mazuma. Mazuma USA. If you're a small business owner between 1 and 5 employees, Mazuma USA is here to help you out. I love it when I always talk about how much I love it when we have reviews and people back. Locked On Jazz community comes and embraces our clients and supports what we're doing here. And Mazuma is a good example of that. And now my favorite is that Anthony Irwin of Locked On Lakers is using Mazuma. It's like, this is incredible. My wife loves this because I'm the most so terribly organized, and now I have a CPA keeping an eye on it. I have a bookkeeper every month, and I get reports every month on how I'm doing. I just show it to her like I'm very professional, and then she figured out Mazuma was doing them for me. For $75 a month is where the package start for you. If you use the promo code LOCKED, MazumaUSA.com, or call 801-980-2102. You get a CPA and a bookkeeper assigned to you. You have quarterly tax calls. You have monthly, you get a report. End of the year, all your taxes are done. There's no contract. You can cancel at any time, and there's no hidden fees. It's Mazuma USA, 801-980-2102, or be locked at MazumaUSA.com. Points gain time. Let's do it. Where is that Excel spreadsheet? There it is. All right, let's look at who the top points gain players in the NBA are. They're not going to be greatly different than I think they were a week ago, but then we'll look at the top 10, which is always kind of fun, and we'll look at the Jazz. Steph has cooled off a little bit. He's down to 5.2. Durant's number 2 at 3.2. What does that mean? That means that if a average player in the NBA used the same 21 scoring opportunities a night that Steph Curry's using, Steph Curry scores 5.2 points more per night than the average player in the NBA. And that means that Kevin Durant is at 3.2, and when you combine the two of them to 8.4, as great as the Raptors seem to be, it seems almost impossible to beat them. Because you'll see there are only about 10 players in the league that are better than 2, and Steph and Kevin are at 8.4. So unless the rest of the Warriors are awful, they still, I think, are unbeatable. James Harden is at 3.1. He was incredible last night. If they ever play defense, they'll be good again. We talked about D'Angelo Russell earlier going to the free throw line 4.4 times percentage. Harden's at 14.1. Durant's at 12.4. Steph Curry goes to line two times as much as D'Angelo Russell. That's a killer, by the way. His lack of athleticism, that's why I probably wouldn't. For 18 million, too big a risk. Maybe. Maybe not. Giannis at 2.7. Rudy Gobert is the fifth most impactful offensive player at 2.7. And how can that be? In his 11 scoring opportunities, he scores 2.7 more than the average player in the league. And if you have another high usage players around him, then that is incredibly valuable. Indiana's Bojan Bogdanović is 2.6, probably the most underrated player in the league, since Pascal Siakam, who's everybody's talking about, is 2.5, and Bogdanović in Indiana is probably doing the same. There are not a lot of players in the league who shoot 30% of their shots or possessions. This counts turnovers. 30% of their possessions as threes and 10% going to the free throw line. And Bojan Bogdanović does that. Let's find that out. Higher than 30% of your possessions are threes. Greater than 10% of your possessions are free throws. A little deeper list than I thought, but here are the top guys. Harden, Bogdanović, Danilo Gallinari, love him. Spencer Dinwiddie, nice pickup. Dame Lillard, Kelly Olynyk, kind of like him too. DJ Augustine, Kemba Walker, Mike Muscala, that's interesting, didn't know he went to the line that much. Wesley Matthews, who's above average. Frank Kaminsky, surprised, gives me a little hope for him. Thabo Sefolosha, Devin Harris, Luka Doncic, now we're into negative, Kelly Oubre, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Jay Crowder does it, Shabazz Napier, Tim Hardaway, Alec Burks, but he does it inefficiently, unfortunately. None of those players are more, Alec is the lowest rated player that does it at minus 0.8, by the way. It's a good combination to stay positive. LeBron's at 2.5. Sabonis is at 2.5. That's why Indiana's so good, by the way. Bogdanović and Sabonis, 2.6 and 2.5. Other than the Warriors, they're the only other team other than the Warriors that have two guys in the top group. And then Clint Capela's next, and now Houston has two guys. John Collins in Atlanta has been great. Montrezl Harrell in L.A. And L.A. has two guys. So look at who the best teams are. Oh, Danilo's not up there. Danilo's in our other chair. Julius Randle's at 1.9, DeAndre Jordan at 1.9, TJ Warren at 1.8, and Phoenix Danilo's at 1.8. Carl Anthony Towns is having a great year at 1.8, Kawhi Leonard 1.7. Where Nikola Vukovic, who we're about to see, is at 1.7. Let's go to the worst offensive players in the league. With Trae Young, minus 2.7, Russell Westbrook, minus 2.2. I'm telling you, he'll kill them. Kevin Knox, minus 2.1. Andrew Wiggins, minus 2.1. Hollis Jefferson, minus 2.1. CeeDee Osmond, minus 2.1. Josh Jackson and Phoenix, minus 2.1. Igor, stop playing Josh Jackson. Avery Bradley, minus 2.0. Markel Fultz, minus 1.9. Eric Gordon in Houston. That's probably the key for them coming back. Jonathan Simmons, minus 1.8. D'Angelo Russell, minus 1.9. So I just did a whole analysis of one of the bottom 12 most efficient offensive players. Bottom 12 efficient offensive players in the league, and talked about paying him like $18 million as though it was a reasonable thing. Boy, do I even believe my own stuff? Who's the hottest player in the NBA? Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, James Harden, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kawhi Leonard, Malcolm Brogdon, no real surprises, Pascal Siakam, Jaylen Brown, Derek Favors. I didn't realize that. Derek Favors last 10 games, 69% from the field. Using 8 scoring opportunities a game. Interesting. Paul Millsap, now hurt. Jonas Valanciunas, Clint Capela, Marcus Morris in Boston. Rashawn Holmes in Phoenix. TJ Warren, Ben Simmons, Al Farouq Aminu, Anthony Davis, Danilo Gallinari. Did you listen to Locked On NBA yesterday? You'll hear me make a fool of myself on the Anthony Davis take at the end. Oops. Rudy Gay, Jakob Poeltl, Rudy Gobert. LaMarcus Aldridge, Spencer Dinwiddie are the hottest players. Who are the coldest players in the league? Do I get D'Angelo Russell again to make myself look really silly? I talked you into D'Angelo Russell, and then we got to the truth. Most inefficient player in the league is Josh Jackson, minus 3.6, tied with Trae Young, then Trey Burke, then Russell Westbrook. CeeDee Osmond, Jamal Murray, Lonzo Ball, Chris Middleton. That's really interesting. I think Chris Middleton might be closer to Rodney Hood than we realize. Josh Jackson in Miami, Tim Hardaway in New York, Lauri Markkanen, D'Angelo Russell is minus 2.8 in his last 10 games. Let's end it right there. I think that should answer our question. By the way, Kemba Walker would have been next. That was Locked On Jazz. What a silly show. Have a great day and a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you from Mexico City.